Welcome to the Ageless Wonders podcast, where we explore the dynamic fusion of aging well, vitality, balanced living, and pop culture. We are your hosts, Todd Gimble and Jonye Lyon. Greetings, guys. This is Jonye Lockett, one of the Ageless Wonders podcast. Thank you guys for being here with us today. Got a special one for you. My co-host Todd actually traveled down to Singapore for some personal matters. As some of you may know from our past episodes, Todd had spent several years working in Singapore as an expat during his time with Herbalife. And he went back, took a family trip, and was able to sit down with his last personal trainer from his years there, Coach Sharm. And so we are blessed to listen in on a conversation that they had about their time down there, as well as during the time of the recording, it was during Ramadan. So you get to hear a little bit about what different cultures deal with when it comes to their fitness and navigating around the holy days and that sort of thing for those that that participate. So very excited for you guys to listen to this one. I'm going to pass it along right now. Here is Todd Gimble and Coach Sharm.
Okay.
All right. So welcome to this special edition interview of the Ageless Wonders. I'm Todd Gimble, and I am in Singapore this week, and I'm thrilled to be with the guy who was my trainer before Jonye Lockett, the precursor to Jonye, Hisham Musa, Coach Sharm. Coach, great to see you. Great to be here with you.
Nice to see you, sir. How are you, man?
I am great. Before we, as we get into this, like, you know, from my point of view, when I was living here in Singapore, I was, you get active here because it's an outdoor place and the weather's always good, but it's also so hot that it's really hard to, like, have a good routine. You know, you walk outside for like 10 minutes and you feel like you've, just ran a marathon.
Yeah.
So I, at some point, realized I really wanted to have a trainer, and I was fortunate enough to find you. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you became a trainer, and let's start with that. And mm-hmm. and then how we knew each other.
I see whether I can remember that. Yeah.
It's like a long time ago.
Quite long. I've been a trainer slash coach for more than 25 years now. Yeah, and I'm blessed to have clients like Todd.
Of course, 25 years, you started when he was like 10.
No, 18. I'm 47 now.
Good, you're an ageless wonder like us. I love it.
Is that the right mathematics?
You're in the zone. You are in the zone. Everybody's aging, so everybody's ageless.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry, interrupt. Yeah. So you've been doing it since you were 18.
Yeah, and before that, of course, there's coaching without certification when I was younger. But 18 was my first qualification. And from then, I just kept on learning. And I loved fitness so much. I did go to the university. I did economics and mathematics. However, my love is still in fitness. So that's why, even though when I was in the uni, I still did personal training. I worked. At the same time, also, I kept on trying to learn new things. And after that, I got my postgrad and then Masters of Science in Exercise Science.
Which is amazing, because a lot of trainers, first of all, start out doing something else and then they find this to be their passion. But you actually then also got the educational chops. Mm. So when you're training, you actually understand physiology, all the things that go into it. So tell me, so you've got that education, you said, I'm going to be a professional trainer. How did you kind of put that into, how did you apply that into like setting up a business? Did you work for someone else first? Did you always start on your own? How did you get going to where you're the force that you are now?
No, I'm not a force. I started with different companies, working for different people for a while. But at the same time, simultaneously, I had my own clients. So the reason why I wanted to work with other people was because I wanted to learn how systems work, right? So some big gyms in Singapore, like I know what's the standard operating procedures and all that, but it's not long, like maybe about 3 months or four mm-hmm. months, and that's part-time.
Right.
And then I had a sense of how things are going, and then I just did my own thing. Ups and downs, of course.
Sure.
Yeah, but I feel blessed to meet very good people along the way. Most of you guys are super good.
Oh, you're going to have a bad one every once in a while. So that's another interesting topic, because Singapore, for those of you who are listening and have never been here, is a very diverse place. Mm. It's a tropical, it's a small country. The primary population is made up of Chinese, Malay, such as yourself, and Indian ethnicities. There's lots of expats from all around the world. I know you are a general guy and you could train anyone, but what are kind of the focus areas? I know you do some expats, and then you also do a lot of work in the Malay community.
Mm. So my clients are quite diverse. So I've got every race out there, I think, my clients, and I feel very blessed, like I said. But I used to train a lot more expats in the past, but now, because the industry has changed and the situations has changed, so less of those kind of clients, but more of the community, like what you mentioned. Yeah, and it's good. But of course, I still have a few very good expat clients. And to me, all of you guys are special to me, because your goal is to get healthier, right? Yeah, yep. Like you. It's amazing what you've done. And at that point in time, when you were about to leave Singapore, when you were about to leave me,
yes,
you did, in 1 minute, 42 push-ups at one go.
I did.
42 or 45?
We'll go with 42. We don't have to exaggerate.
Principle of conservatism. Is that what I call it?
No, and that is a testament to the philosophy that when I came to you, I mean, I wasn't out of shape, but I certainly wasn't fit. And you know, when someone walks in and says, "Coach Charm, take me, bring me on a journey," what do you do first? How do you start? How do you analyze, you know, what you're going to need to do to get them to their, down the road towards being more fit?
Mm, thanks. That's a very good question. I think same as any other trainer out there, right? Firstly, you see where you're at in terms of your physical abilities, whether you've been working out or not, how's your food intake? Yeah, talking about food intake, I've got a very interesting story. Most of the time, we eat 3 meals a day, right?
Yes.
And we usually have a plate. Or food, or sometimes two.
Yeah, sometimes especially two. Here where the food is like amazing.
Yeah, and one of my clients, I made a little mistake. This was when I was much younger. I assumed that as a normal Asian person, we eat one or maybe two plates because of second serving, right? But after 3 weeks, we did a bit of tweaks in terms of percentages. After 3 weeks, things never changed. So I asked her, "So how many plates do you actually have every meal?" So she said that, "Oh, I started with 5 plates per meal."
Oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was my junior rookie mistake, right? Because I don't want to assume that she eats a lot, because she looks a little overweight, not overly too much. So she said that, "Okay, I did what you said, cut back 20%. Which, in theory, that is great.
Yeah, it's went to 3 plates.
Because you cannot stay, we drop to 2 from 5. Yeah, so then I said, okay, we need to do something about this. Yeah. But anyway, different people are different. So I asked them their situation, now more detail, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then what they like, what they don't like. Some of the exercises we do, they like. Some of the exercises we still have to do, even though they don't like. It's like that, right?
You are like the squat king. Believe me, I probably did more. But then you never learn to like them, but you learn to appreciate them.
You say squat king, but you can do 42 push-ups.
There you go.
There you go.
I might have to, right after this, I might have to get down and see if I can still do it.
Confident you can do it?
Probably.
Nice.
Probably.
You've been working out so much. Like, no, in proper number of sessions in a week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So regular. Wow.
Well,
so good.
So anyway, so you assess the person, and because of the diversity, you talk about the Asian diet. Do you notice a difference between Asian diet and a Western diet?
From what I know, from the little conversations I have with the different expats and the different local people, right? What I find is that for the locals, most of the time, we have quite a fair bit of variety on our table when we eat. Mm-hmm. So there's always protein, there's vegetables, you know, there's of course our staple, which is rice,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I would say like there's a little more rice than everything else, but yes.
Yeah. That has changed because, you know, more people have the ability to buy more rice. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
But not so much processed food as compared to if I were to talk to a non-Asian. But let's say someone in Europe, let's say, right? A lot more processed food. But by the way, this is just my personal experience.
That's okay.
Experience.
We know that.
Yeah. So we need to make some changes to that and eat like whole foods and all.
Right.
But now, like this current age, 2024, is great because we all want to go natural, all natural. Mm-hmm. I won't go to where you're thinking what I'm going to talk about,
no,
but yeah,
okay.
Like, you know, the farm to table approach.
Yeah.
So that's super good in the US and everywhere
but,
else.
But also, as a guy who's now lived in the US for a couple of years again, and I see here, there's also an influx here of more fast food. Like I see Shake Shack. So the Asian folks who traditionally would have gone to these wonderful hawker centers where the guy's like cooking the food right there are now also like excited to go to like Western style places, which that's not exactly a great thing, is it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think, yeah, I like fast food. I love fast food. But I know how good it can be for me and my body. So I try to maybe limit the number of times I eat there.
Well, and that's one of the things that Joanie and I talk about a lot is there's there are people who are so like almost religious about this being healthy. And then there are people who don't do anything.
Mm.
Our philosophy is kind of, I think what is yours is like, look, you can live a healthy lifestyle, you can get in shape, but you shouldn't like totally deprive yourself of the luxuries of having ice. I know you like ice cream, you know, but it's a lot better to have the ice cream if you know you've done other things to kind of keep your fitness up and you know the other percentage of your meals that week are healthier, right?
Can I just add on to this?
Please.
This is part of my philosophy when I share with my clients, and I think you hear this a lot, right? The reason why we eat is because we want to nourish our body with good food, nutrients, vitamins, and when that happens, our body will get better, yeah? But that doesn't mean that we cannot have our latte, which is milk, by the way, not coffee.
Yeah.
And caramel latte is caramel and not coffee.
Yes.
Yeah, so we can have all that, but as long as we have that at the back of our minds that, okay, my goal for today is to nourish my body. I can be naughty at times, but most of the things that I'm eating should be okay. And I will not overeat, right?
Because that's good. So you're not doing five plates?
No, I hope not. I can try, but...
Well, I can tell, you know, and Coach is a Malay guy, and my wife Hani's Malay, and she makes great Malay food, and I can tell you that it's always tempting to have more than one plate because it's good food.
Yes, yeah. It's always tempting.
And one of the things that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you were the one who kind of introduced me to intermittent fasting, too. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, because I still do it to some extent.
So good.
Tell us a little bit about that, because I see stuff now, like now it's a thing. When you talked to me about it, I'd never even heard of it. But give us a little intro to like what that is and why you think it's a good thing.
Okay, I think a lot of people know this, and I think you know this also.
Yeah.
But just to share, when we talked about intermittent fasting a few years ago, it was not well accepted because people always feel, because it's been taught to us by our parents, our grandparents, right? To eat three times a day. So when I told Todd that, you know, I have to tell you something.
Yeah.
We don't need to eat three times a day, right? And he's like, okay, tell me. He's always open to ideas, right? It's amazing, right? and just the idea to skip breakfast, basically to fast and push through that eating period for 16 hours, of course, progressively from 8 hours to 10 hours, and teach the body to be able to not have any food for 16 hours. At that point in time, it was quite new, yeah?
Yeah.
And a lot of people couldn't accept that because they are worried they won't have any energy. Because breakfast, you need to eat breakfast.
Well, everyone says it's the most important meal.
Yeah, the most important. Eat like a king.
Yeah.
Eat breakfast like a king,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah. But I'll tell you, so we talked about this years ago. And I think at that time, there was like a Harvard study or some study had come out. And you sent it to me. And I'm not like, I would take his word for it anyway. But you sent me this and I read it. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And I have to tell you that I don't do it as religiously as I should. But if you stop eating, you know, 8 o'clock at night and you push on till, you know, lunchtime and you have lunch at like 1 o'clock or something like that, you can drink water. You can have like black coffee. There are a couple things you can do.
Yeah.
I sometimes cheat a little and have a tiny bit of milk in my coffee. But the concept is that during that time, your body starts to take away some of the deeper fat that doesn't go away if you're eating all day, right? You can explain it better. Give me a little, like, what is it? How does it work?
That's it.
Oh, God. I'm an expert.
That's it. Yeah. So basically, when we eat, right, there's glucose that we use for energy. Yeah. So the food that we eat, when we move, we burn it through the glucose that we digest. And if we don't have that glucose in our body, in our system, we need to find energy somewhere else.
Right.
Somewhere else, right? So where? That's where the fat stores comes in. And that's why the body needs to learn how to tap into these fat stores so that we can thrive even though we don't have any food, because fat is energy.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, sadly, you know, there's like 7-Elevens and then there's a giant supermarkets. I have a giant supermarket fat store that I need to work on. you know, I mean, no offense, Coach Joignet and Coach Sharma. I mean, I'm in good shape.
You're looking good, man.
But as we get older, tell me, like, this is the hardest part to get rid of. Like, what do you, how do you work with people who are trying to get rid of that spare tire, as we call it?
Spare tire. Do they call it this?
Yeah.
Spare tire in the US?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like
okay.
Spare tire.
No, same as me. I think everyone knows this, right? I love to eat ice cream. And at one point in time, I ate like over 3 years, about one ice cream a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And sometimes two of those,
yeah,
right?
Two scoops,
two scoops of different flavors. Right? Ooh. Yeah. And I realized something. When I stop, right, my belly actually shrinks a little bit. I feel better.
Okay.
Right? But again, coming back to our philosophy, right, we can eat these things as long as we know where we're at, right?
Right.
So whenever I feel that I'm expanding a bit too much, and I'm very sensitive to these things, right? So when that happens, and I just cut back, I just stop for a while, and it goes down, okay? So when you ask me just now, like, how do I handle this, right? Firstly, I always ask, what are your favorite foods?
Right.
Right? And then how can we lower that down? Mm-hmm. How can we lower that down, not cut it altogether, right? So
right.
For me, instead of, I say that, I eat ice cream every day, I say that I eat 30 scoops of ice cream a month. So from that perspective, this is 30 scoops. It's not one a day.
Yeah.
365.
That's a lot of scoops.
Lot of scoops. And sometimes I'm
so you've kind of not monetized it, but you put it into a number and it kind of really makes it, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that started, okay, then maybe you cut back every other day and suddenly 50% of whatever yummy food, but not healthy food, right? 50% is cut, and that should help lower down the tummy down again. Of course, this is putting exercise.
And you still have to be doing all the other good things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that makes sense. Like my vices are French fries and then like,
yummy.
And like chips and stuff, like potato chips and
with cheese.
Ooh. No, I don't do it. But I like out of the bag snacks, which are terrible because they're highly processed.
Oh, those chips. Yeah.
So I think what I'm hearing from you is, I should kind of take inventory of how much I'm eating of that stuff and then say, okay, because I could cut it. I just don't think, like, when you have that ice cream on Monday and on Friday, you don't think on Friday that's my fifth scoop of the day of the week.
Yeah.
But when you start putting it in those terms, it might make it easier to say, okay, instead of having a bag of chips while I'm watching TV 5 nights a week, I'm going to cut it to 2 nights a week.
Yeah.
And then it'll be actually probably more exciting to have it because there'll be more of a reward than, here's my nightly chips.
Yeah. It could be a challenge because your usual when you're watching Netflix, you
I know. Well, and training had a thing about habits. Like,
yeah,
it takes a like. If your habit was having this ice cream, to break that habit and like introduce a new habit, which is 3 scoops a week instead of 7, it doesn't just happen easily. It's a conscious effort, right?
Yeah, yeah. That habit change is a serious thing.
So, I wanted to ask you. In Singapore, the Malay community are mostly Muslims, and we have just started on the holy month of Ramadan. We're a couple days into it. And in Ramadan, you have to fast from right before sunrise to right after sunset. And I know you, tell me a little bit about how do you advise your Muslim clients to continue to be active during this kind of crazy time when they really can't have any food for a big portion of the day. What is your advice to them? I know you published kind of a little guide. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because I think people would be interested in that.
So you're asking for Muslims, how do we work out during a fasting period where we don't have water and
yeah,
food?
Yeah, and that's right? the clincher. You can't even have water. You can't have pre-workout, any of that. So give me, what do you do?
In sports science, exercise science, when we want to go for performance for professional athletes, there's this thing called periodization, where in, let's take a 90-day time frame, and we have different things that we do at different phases in that 90 days. Yeah, whether you want to get stronger, or you want to improve your cardio, or you want to improve your strength, your power, all at different times, right? So in this month also, we can use the same concept of periodization, which means the first few days, let your body learn that, hey, workouts are still on, right? And the body needs to adapt to the kind of workouts that I do. So if you were to work out like before, right,
when
you work out 100%, and you can drink water, and some of us have like pre-workout drinks and all that, where, you know, it gives you the pump and all, and now you suddenly do not have any of
or
that.
A protein shake afterwards or whatever, or having a protein, right?
Yeah, and we look forward to that protein shake, right?
Oh gosh, yeah.
So now we don't have all that, right? So the body needs to learn this new system where it has to adapt. And I always start small. So like for me, instead of going for my normal volume, like 100%, I will go for maybe 20% of my normal volume. So
the first couple of days as your body's reacting to this deprivation of food for like 12 plus hours a day.
Yes. I think, yes, correct. Right. A little longer for different countries.
But here it's... here it's because we're so close to the equator, it's pretty regular. Whereas like in places like the US, poor Hani, my wife who does it, like sometimes a year the sun comes out at 5 a.m. and it doesn't set till 9:30 at night. And the further up you get or down in the as the globe goes, if it happens in winter, that's shorter, which is great because it's short, but it doesn't matter where you are, you go by the sunrise and sunset. So being in Singapore, you're actually lucky because it's pretty consistent year round. Whereas certain times a year for Muslims in like the US and other places, it could be, you know, 14 hours or more, 15 hours. So anyway, so you start slow.
Yeah, you just scale back everything that you're doing. And, you know, after the workout, you might not feel that you did a good workout, but that's not the goal. The goal is not to have a good workout, it's to teach your body. Let me just share with you what usually my body goes through. In the first week, usually I go about 80% of my usual because I have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, you're a pro.
No.
Well, you know.
Because I've been fasting for many years. I try to be good at fasting. And also I've been doing intermittent fasting.
Right.
So I've not been eating while I've been working out, right? And in the second, third, and the fourth week, I will find my strength to get better and better. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctively in one of the months where I really wanted to get back, like my fitness was one of my goals, right? Usually in Ramadan, we don't really focus on fitness. We focus on other things, right? So when I was younger, there was one year, I wanted to be very strong. And when I worked out in that last week of Ramadan, before breaking fast, I was breaking my personal best for a few exercises.
Wow.
Yeah, I was stronger in Ramadan not eating, not drinking water as compared to normal days.
Maybe because you were more focused.
That's right.
And you were more intense and more like deliberate, and you were just like, you were focused on it. Whereas the rest of the year, it's like, eh, I'm going to have some water after this.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And well, that's wild.
Yeah. And the body just learns, right? In that 1, 2, 3 weeks, right? The body learns how to adapt. And we are using our fat stores, right? Most of the time.
Yeah. It's a good time to kind of catch up and get rid of some of that stuff because you're kind of forced to.
Yeah. And it's nice to have these kind of surprises. But it's not only me. There's a lot of other clients of mine who actually go through that if they're consistent in their workout. I'm talking about hypertrophy workout, not HIIT, by the way.
No, you know, it reminds me of an interesting story. So in addition to working out with you, I had a tennis coach when I lived here, Coach Janice. He had been, like, I think, Singapore champion years ago. He's a Malay guy. He would coach, you know, outside. All these tennis courts here are outside. And in Singapore, the climate is, it's for you Americans, it's in the high 80s temperature every day and very high humidity. And when I would do an hour tennis lesson with this guy, I would probably lose 2 pounds just in that hour, just running around. I mean, he's a good player, so he was standing still, but I was running around. But this guy during Ramadan trained every day. He didn't take a day off. He's older than me. And he can't drink water. I mean, that's the key. I mean, I can maybe, but it's the hydration part. But to your point, I think he'd been doing it for so many years that he was able to, I'm sure, like, the first couple of days are tough, but once you educate kind of your body to adapt, it adapts, right? And that's kind of, I think that seems to be a little bit of your philosophy. Like, if you're going to really change your habits, which you have to do every year, don't try to, like, go crazy the first couple of days. You got to, like, ease into it, and your body will adapt to this new, the new normal for those 30 days, right?
And we have a few new normals whenever we have our habit change in that process, right? We always have, like, okay, this is the new normal now. Next few days, this is the new normal now.
Yep.
And then from there, you can just go on and on, I guess.
That's great. That's great. Mm. So you have lived in Singapore your entire life, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great place, and I'm a PR. So tell me, a lot of our people that are listening here have never been here. Tell me the couple things you like about Singapore, and then when you leave here, where do you like to go? Where are your favorite places?
Oh, this is a non-fitness thing. Yeah.
Of course, we're just talking here. We're not. We talk about some serious subjects, but we aren't always serious, and we want to get to know people.
Yeah. Okay, why I like Singapore? Mm-hmm. Living in Singapore, I think I have kids, and one of the main reasons why I love here so much is that it is safe.
Yes.
I'm extremely stressed out whenever they go out, so I can't imagine if it's somewhere else. Like
like where I live in LA, oh my God, you think you're stressed here.
but the thing is this, right, because everything is so safe, everything is so, everything is, wherever you go, you don't see crime, and
right.
when
no,
there's
it
a little
is,
crime, it goes in the news, right? And it's quite weird. There was once I was walking with my wife, and my kids were little too, on a boardwalk. It's dark at 7:30 p.m. Right, and we're walking on a boardwalk beside the sea, and then there were these two young ladies. I'm just guessing about 15 years old, and they're just sitting down, just chit chatting with their phones and all, and I will not say what they were wearing, but I don't think it would be safe for just being there in the dark anywhere else in the world. I feel, But in Singapore, they can just be wherever they are, wear whatever they want at any time. So it's safe. So basically, I think that doesn't mean that low crime don't mean
no
crime.
Believe me, it is.
Yeah. I'm going to use that tagline.
It is. There's not no crime, but if there's even a little crime, it's huge news here. And there's no violent crime. There are no guns. It's a wonderful thing, especially with your kids. Like, my story that I always would tell here is, in Singapore, if you're walking down the street at 3 a.m, and you're maybe had a little too much fun that night in a bar, and like $100 bills are falling out of your pockets, you know, in the U.S., someone would jump you in, you'd be knocking over the head with a bottle, and you'd be done. They'd take the money and run. here someone would chase after you to give you the money back that fell out of your pocket.
Yeah,
like, excuse me, sir. I just dropped $100.
Yeah, this one more. Yeah,
it's like that, that's the kind of safety you have here.
Yeah, and so I'm blessed here. Yeah, we are all blessed.
I mean, the challenge though is for your kids too, and even for Singaporeans, when you leave here, you've got this like bubble mentality, and you go to a Los Angeles where I live, or New York, or even, you know, like Melbourne, places like that, where it isn't, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not as safe. You have to prepare yourself that you're not in Singapore anymore.
Yes, yeah. So true. And I always keep on telling them that Singapore is different than other places. When you are outside of Singapore, you have to be on guard, right? You must always be mindful of what's happening around you. You know, father will always mention these things, right?
I don't care where you live. You're a father. You're going to be concerned. Until your kids are home, tucked into bed, if they're out by themselves.
Yeah. Right.
And your kids are getting older, where they're probably wanting to be out a little bit more now without you.
Very much. Yeah. But that being said, this is the reason why, one of the reasons why I love to travel with my kids. Sometimes we go quite far out, like New Zealand and US and even Switzerland, right? We feel blessed to be able to do so. One of the reasons is to open up their eyes and see how other countries are, right? And for them to practice to be aware of what's happening around them. Yeah, and
so to help them understand A, how good they have it here, and B,
gratitude,
when they're in their own lives later, like let's say when your kids decides to go to school in Europe or in Australia, that you've prepared them that it's not the same as Singapore.
Yes. Yeah. I once lost my young little one. Now he's 17. I lost him in Venice Beach.
That's right near my house.
Yeah.
That's a scary place to lose somebody.
Oh my God. We were looking at this busker, right? He was this black man. He's so talented doing his stuff, standing on chairs and all that. Like
I think the guy's still there, by the way. I'm sure he is.
50, 60 people. And then he's still with me. My other girl was in a pram, in a stroller, right? And then once everyone was dispersed, we were clapping hands and all that, and he's gone.
Oh, God.
Heart dropped to the ground. Like, I lost him. Like, I was not even like, where are you? You know, I call out his name, where are you? No, I was shouting and screaming at the top of my lungs. After 2 minutes, my heart was like, running a marathon.
Yeah,
and he just came back and like, where do you go? I threw litter in the bin.
He's being a good Singapore boy.
Oh my God. I think he was like four.
That's three. Wild. Those are those parental things. And to your point, if it were here, I mean, you still want, but you would have been like totally at wit's end, like, oh my God, I may never see him again. Has he been kidnapped or something? I get it.
Yeah, the word kidnap is very scary.
So where's your... of all the places you've been outside of Singapore, what's your favorite place?
You know, right?
New Zealand. They go to New Zealand.
But you know why?
Tell me why.
One reason, again, me and my kids, because it's so safe.
But it's a different environment, like the climate.
There you go.
The geography, right?
Yeah, so there's volcanic eruptions, there's thunderstorms. So the safety is different kind of like, yeah.
Wow.
But I don't know why we're talking about safety, but...
This is the ageless wonders. And here's the thing. You now have older... You know, the concerns you had as a younger guy with young kids have evolved into different concerns for your older kids.
Yeah.
And it's same with fitness. Like what you were trying to do when you were young during Ramadan to like say, I'm going to make this like, I'm going to be like Incredible Hulk after this. You probably don't do that anymore.
Nah.
Because you're more mature. It's like, I don't need to impress anyone. So the whole idea is we're on a journey, and what you did 5 years ago, 10 years ago is different from what you should be doing now, which is probably different from what you're going to be doing 5 years from now and 10 years from now.
Mm.
It's all part of the journey, but there's some basic things like working with a great guy like you who I guarantee you, when you have a 25-year-old as a client, you're not doing the same thing with him or her as you are with a 65-year-old.
Mm.
You're still trying to get them along the path, but you have to course correct for the fact that they're older and that there are different things that are more important to them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like you mentioned just now, right?
Yeah.
Like the older we get, the more we need to work on balance.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, my dad, we interviewed my dad, and at age 88, when he goes to the gym, it's more for balance purposes, a little tone, but you know, the days of him running the hurdles on the track are unfortunately gone. But that's okay.
Yeah,
that's just okay. It's part of the journey, right? Yeah. All right, so I got my last question, because I know you've got some things to do, is and you can be honest here, this is friends, this is fun. When you want to like tweak one of like be a little bit tough on a, like one of your clients being a little bit obnoxious or like pushing back on you, like I did sometimes, what's the exercise you make them do to like shut them up, to humble them?
Okay.
No, that's okay. This is fun. Tell me. Okay.
You know what? It's hard to be, but I don't have any punishment. I'm so boring.
Yeah, you're the nicest guy in the world. No. But if you did, what is
it? But if I did, which I never do, is
yes, burpees. I will swear that, burpees.
Burpees, okay. Which I don't do any in my classes. And even if I do some kind of burpee, it will be a modified one. Okay. Because I always believe that...
It's too nice, this
guy. I always believe in keeping things doable, because the goal of fitness is consistency. It is not about, to me, it is not about burning calories. You want to get strong by the end of the year or whatnot. It's just be consistent. Of course, we want to get strong by the end of the year.
But
the
goal is a process. But gradually ratchet it up. That's
the goal is a process.
Like when we first started, you didn't say do 40 push-ups or I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah. Better clarify that.
I think I could do like 10 when we first started. Maybe 5, maybe 10, maybe 8.
I have that video too, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's right. He's got all the... This guy keeps records. I'm screwed. But no, listen. It's so great to catch up with you.
Likewise.
We will do this again. You are certainly a member of our Ageless Wonders team. And I will say, you know, happy Ramadan and everything that follows. And thanks for being with us, man.
Thank you.
This has been great. Trainer number one, my favorite guy. Joanie, you're okay too. You're not bad. Thanks.
Joanie, right? That's
his Joanie. Joanie. Say hello to him.
Hi. Thank you for taking care of Todd. Yeah.
All right, man.
Push him a bit.
Yeah.
Nudge him here and there.
Believe me. Believe me.
I think he's doing a great job.
All right, guys. Thanks.
See ya.